This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Kick off your future with the law firm of Condori & Murad, the official G&D show sponsor. They're going to help protect your assets, update your will and trust. Schedule a free estate planning strategy like my parents did with one of their attorneys out in Fairfax, and they are glad they did. Everything was taken care of seamlessly. It was a very easy process. They raved about it. You can go to kmlawyers.com, mention this show, Grant and Danny. You'll get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Caller number 10 right now at 800-636-1067. As promised, congrats, you're going to win a four-pack of VIP match tickets to Old Glory DC Rugby. Listen to this. With these VIP match tickets for Saturday, April 20th, coming up in 11 days, you get to see them play Houston. Your tickets are complete with an Old Glory player ambassador who's going to sit with you to break down the game. And you get pizza at your seat throughout the game from Paisanos as well. Caller number 10, 800-636-1067. Enjoy yourself with that awesome experience. Let's get right now to the Beltway Blitz, and we'll start on the diamond. News is not good for the Nationals. Mark Zuckerman, MassinSports.com. Nats are out in San Francisco taking on the Giants, and they're moving forward for now without Josiah Gray. So, Mark, give us the details on the injury and just how big of a lingering effect this could have and for how long.
Well, guys, let's point out, like, we don't really know yet. Hopefully we'll learn more this afternoon when we get to the ballpark and speak to Dave Martinez and hopefully Josiah himself. So, I mean, when you hear flexor strain, that's kind of a nebulous term. It can mean a lot of different things. Ideally, it's a minor thing that they caught early, and maybe he misses a few weeks and could be back throwing. I think that's what happened with Hunter Harvey last summer. But it also could be something more severe that takes months, or in a worst-case scenario, it can be a sign of a much larger issue with your elbow, and we all know what that can mean in the long run. So you hope it's not that. We'll find out. The one thing I'll say, I don't think this caught them completely off guard, because Yoan Adone was here yesterday at the ballpark. So they clearly knew that there was reason to fly him in from Rochester, and whether they knew for sure Josiah was going to make the start, or at least there was a chance he wasn't going to make it, they had to at least know for a few days that something was up. So I don't think this just suddenly came up in the last, 24 hours or anything.
And that's what I wanted to ask you about, Mark, is what signs were there? Because it didn't seem like Adone was flying across country today to pitch tonight. He was already in place there in San Francisco. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I saw him yesterday at the end of BP, and it sort of like takes a second to process. Wait a minute, he's not on the team. What's he doing here? Now, they allow the taxi squad, and you can have guys on the road with you who are not on the active roster as kind of a just-in-case. And when you're all the way on the West Coast for a long time, maybe you want to have somebody on board in case something were to happen. But, in my mind, this wouldn't be the guy you would necessarily do that with, and it did kind of make my mind immediately go to, I wonder if anything's up with Josiah because he's scheduled to pitch tomorrow. So this may be a short-term thing as far as Adone being the one to fill in for him. We'll see how he does. He pitched once at Rochester. It didn't go all that well. I think we've seen him, over the last couple of years know what he is. So this may just be he was available for this start. But the fact that he was here, that did tip me off that chances are they knew something was up. Now, as far as Josiah goes, he hadn't said anything about his arm not feeling well, but look at the results the first two starts. They were not good. I didn't sense there was an issue with velocity at all. I think it was more command. He was all over the place with his fastball in his last start against the Pirates. hopefully he can shed some more light and let us know what he was feeling and when. But I suppose if you want to feel somewhat encouraged, I guess it's nice to know that maybe his poor results here were a result of him not feeling 100% as opposed to him just not pitching well.
Yeah, I guess that's the best way to view it potentially is he's back in a couple weeks and pitching better, that maybe it wasn't that he was really struggling as much as he was battling through something. You mentioned Yoan Adon. He is 25 years old. His ERA was over 7 two seasons ago, over 6 last year. For his career, it's up around 7. So I'll take what you said as we kind of know what he is, and I will double stamp that. Why him? I mean, did they bring him just as a safety valve and they didn't want to bring, you know, Jackson Rutledge, who they want to develop in AAA and jerk him around? Or, like, he's probably the fourth guy I would like to see called up to take this spot.
Yeah, no, I get you, Grant. I think it's probably something along those lines. I haven't had a chance to look yet, like, when did Rutledge last pitch? Maybe he wasn't, you know, on schedule if he just pitched 3 days ago and couldn't make the start. So it could be something like that. Maybe they did this because they weren't 100% sure he was going to be needed. So if you had to fly a guy and have him miss a start and then goes back to Rochester, well, you don't mind doing that as much with someone like Adon as opposed to a Rutledge or, you know, Mitchell Parker, like one of their other prospects that they like. So I'll be interested to see. Let's see how long Gray is out. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is a one-start kind of deal for Adon, and then they, you know, work things around to figure out who makes the most sense. I think Rutledge is the one that they were, you know, felt like is closest to being ready. Didn't make the opening day roster, but I think they looked at him as sort of the sixth guy, the first one they would call upon. But as you know, sometimes the timing just doesn't work out. It doesn't make sense to do that.
Mark, what's the latest on CJ Abrams?
Should be back in the lineup tonight. They are hopeful of that. He took BP yesterday. He took grounders at short. Everything seems to be fine. I think it's just like a pain tolerance issue as far as the bone bruise in his thumb. His pinky finger. They could use that. Obviously, they did well last night even without him. But we know how dynamic he is, how important he is to them. So if he's back in the lineup tonight, that's a good sign. They could use that. They may need to score some more runs now given the state of the pitching staff.
Mentioning the win last night very briefly, 3 hits for Lane Thomas and a homer. It just seems like they like this ballpark the last few years.
They have played well here. Last night, what I give them so much credit for is they came in with a plan offensively. They knew Blake Snell was making his debut. They knew his pitch count was going to be reduced because he didn't have a spring training. And they knew his reputation as a guy who, while the stuff is great, you don't know where it's always going to go. And they made him work, and they got him out of the game after 3 innings and 72 pitches. And it's not like they were crushing him by any stretch, but they made him work enough to score some runs, drive up the pitch count, and then you get into the, you know, lesser portion of the Giants bullpen by the 4th inning, and that's who Lane Thomas homered off of. Trey Lipscomb had a good game. I want to see more of that. I know yesterday was a little bit of an extreme circumstance given who they were facing, but this team needs to be more patient at the plate. Too often this year already, we've seen them let a starting pitcher get to the 6th inning, and he's still, you know, in the 70s pitch count-wise. Work the count a little bit. It's okay to do that. Hopefully they got some lessons last night on how to do that more regularly.
Mark, thank you as always, buddy. Enjoy the West Coast.
All right, thank you, guys.
We'll see you, man. Hit that sounder, please, for the Caps. Our buddy Ben Raby, Caps Radio Network, to preview this one tonight. Ben, it's a big one. Caps are in a bit of a schneid here. How do they get out of it?
Yeah, looking for some more offense, some more offensive finish, certainly. A 6-game winless skid here, a total of 10 goals scored for the Capitals. It's been tough to come by that even strength, and it's been tough to come by on the power play as well, fellas. Not only the volume of missed opportunities on the power play, but they've been unable to take advantage of power play chances at key moments in games. This goes back more than a week ago, but 4 minutes of power play time and an eventual shootout loss to the Boston Bruins. More recently, Sunday against the Ottawa Senators, a power play opportunity, a two-man advantage, in fact, to begin the second period the other night that they couldn't take advantage of. So starts with some more offensive finish. It's gone really dry offensively. And if they could jump out to a lead, easier said than done, but if they could jump out to a lead, you know, protecting it, which is something they've done very well for much of the year, you know, it obviously better suits them than having to chase the game and open things up and have to cheat, which they've been guilty of a little bit as well on this 6-game slide.
Ben, qualify for us, if you would, the importance of tonight, if they win versus if they lose from a playoff standpoint.
Yeah, this is, I mean, cliche. We've been saying it almost every game. It's the biggest game of the season, but it really is, given who they're playing tonight. They're playing Detroit, and here's why it gets dangerous, if you will, if they lose tonight. It's the fact that Detroit then gets 2 points, one of the teams they're chasing, and then on Thursday, Detroit and Pittsburgh play each other. So, you know, one of those teams is coming away with 2 points. And then looking even further ahead next week, Pittsburgh and the Islanders play each other. Again, two of the teams the Capitals are chasing. So in other words, everyone's going to be getting points over the next week plus, and you just hope the Capitals could be part of that equation, if nothing else, to keep pace. So certainly the urgency very high tonight, again, because of who they're playing in terms of a Red Wings team that, again, plays Pittsburgh, and then that's a Penguins team that still has the Islanders on tap. So they're going to have to start winning because the teams around them, you know, someone on a given night is getting 2 points seemingly around them.
Benjamin, I'm old enough to remember March of 2024 when the Caps went 8-3. Then they beat the brakes off everybody except for Toronto. And I don't think that's a great matchup, but I'd like to never see Toronto again. But that team was scrappy. They were maybe out kicking their coverage a little bit. They were scoring goals, kind of as you alluded to. Now, all of a sudden, as they've dropped six straight, a couple, you know, overtime losses and a shootout one in there, I guess, kind of as part of it. So they've gotten two points over the last six. It's looked a lot different. Quantify it for me. What's the difference between that 8-3 team and that 0-6 team?
Well, again, one of the differences is the goals were coming far more easily. They averaged just over 3.5 goals per game for that stretch you're talking about, which ranked in the top 10, as conversely to scoring only 10 times over the last six games. So the offense has gone dry. And, you know, to elaborate on that real quick, it's not only that the finish hasn't been there. You know, Spencer Carberry has spelled it out that there's an appetite to get more, you know, meat and potatoes in the offensive game right now, a little bit more grind. You know, the highlight reel two-on-one goals that maybe were available a few weeks ago aren't necessarily available at this time of year when teams tend to tighten up, a team like Detroit tonight being an example, you know, given what they have at stake. And there's an appetite, you know, just to get in on the forecheck. It sounds cliche, but to get in on the forecheck, get greasy, and there's a thought that they haven't done enough of that, particularly over this six-game skid. They're looking for the beautiful goal, the highlight reel goal, just a matter of trying to simplify things, and really they don't have much of a choice here with only five games remaining and ground to make up still.
Who's got to shine tonight, and what kind of changes to the lineup should we anticipate?
Well, on the back end, we know no Rasmus Sandin. That's a minutes eater back there, second most ice time on the team behind only John Carlson. He's not part of the road trip. He's going to miss some time with an upper body injury. So you look lower down the depth chart. Trevor Van Riemsdyk, an elevated role tonight. Vinny Iorio in only his fifth career NHL game. Talk about being thrown into the fire. He'll be on the third pair tonight on the back end. So a little bit thinner defensively. Conversely, reinforcements could be on the way up front. I know everyone's looking forward to TJ Oshie's return. Company line is game time decision, but he's been ramping things up, been taking part in practice, was at the morning skate today in Detroit. I would anticipate we'll see TJ back, and that, to our bigger point of the need for offense, power play success, you know, would certainly be a welcome boost in those areas as well.
Ben, always appreciate it, buddy. Talk soon.
Thank you, fellas.
We'll see you, brother. Hit that local 53 sounder, Darius. Television's Scott Abraham joins us to talk about the local football outfit. Scott, right now you got to place a bet at the window. Who does Washington draft at number two?
I'm going with Jaden Daniels right now, Danny. I think he has a higher ceiling. He's got the arm, he's got the legs, and he's got the hardware to prove it, winning the Heisman Trophy. I think he sees the moments in college playing the SEC-type competition. He's got a high ceiling, and I think he'll be a good fit with Cliff Kingsbury's offense. But it doesn't matter what I think, Danny. They just got to get it right. That's all I care about. They got to get it right. I don't care if it's Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels. They got to get it right because it's so critical to finally find that quarterback to move this franchise forward.
You mentioned Cliff Kingsbury in that answer. How much should he factor into this, who he prefers, who fits his offense?
I mean, why wouldn't he be a big factor? Because they've talked at length about how they're going to mold the offense around the quarterback. They said that multiple times in their press conference. And as you know, guys, he's worked with those athletic-type quarterbacks in the past, the Caleb Williams, the Kyler Murrays, the Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech. So Jaden Daniels kind of fits that profile of the quarterback that Cliff Kingsbury's used to, I think he's going to have a say in the discussion.
In terms of the staff that they've created, I don't want to get your take on this guy. We talked about it a while ago, but we've been so focused on free agency and other parts of this thing. There seems to be a lot of talent layering, both in terms of veteran guys like Anthony Lynn, younger up-and-comers like Brian Johnson, although kind of, you know, a bit of a stumbling block last year as Philadelphia collapsed down the stretch. But I like that. It's kind of looks to me like they're building in case they're successful and someone like Kingsbury leaves.
Yeah, I didn't really see it like that, but you bring up a good point because, you know, with success comes, look what happened to the Dallas Cowboys. You know, I wouldn't really say they're that successful, but certainly they've had more wins than Washington, and their staff got raided when Quinn came over to Washington. So in the case that Washington does pull a Houston Texans-type turnaround, you're right, and I didn't really see that vision. And you have the experience, as you mentioned, but also the young up-and-coming guys on the staff. So I think it might be a safety blanket in a sense where you have these veteran coaches that have been there, done that, kind of pass their wisdom and knowledge on to these younger assistants, and they can build from within if they are successful and coaches get head coaching opportunities and whatnot.
Quick count. I've got 14 new starters out of 25 positions if you count 11-0, 11-D, and then the three specialists going into the season. Where do you still think, from a need standpoint, other than the two everyone talks about, quarterback and tackle, where do they still need to make the most headway?
So you can never have too many defensive ends, especially when you lost Chase Young and you lost Montez Sweat. The guys that they brought in, the free agents, they've had some success, but for the most part, maybe they're unproven. I wouldn't mind maybe getting another defensive end in the draft. I look at the secondary. My gosh, they weren't great last year, and certainly losing a Kendall Fuller, that hurts. Emmanuel Forbes, is he going to have that, you know, sophomore resurgence his second year in the NFL? That's going to be a key factor, the development of Emmanuel Forbes, because they drafted him in that first round last year. Do you go get another cornerback just in case Forbes, in a sense, is a bust? So I think defensive end, linebacker certainly, you know, doesn't hurt when you have a Wagner in that linebacking room to mold a young rookie linebacker. So I'm going with those three positions right now, guys, and that's all on defense, unfortunately, because as you know, that defense was atrocious last year.
What kind of season is Jahan Dotson going to have?
I think he's going to have a nice bounce back season, especially with Curtis Samuel now in Buffalo. The onus falls on Jahan to rise up and fill those shoes. Certainly had kind of a down year last year. Did he not get enough targets from a Sam Howell? He's going to have to build that chemistry with a new quarterback. You're going to have Terry McLaurin. He's going to get his. But I think Jahan Dotson is going to be that number two wide receiver that's got to step up and get those targets and get those first downs on those third down plays.
Scott, thank you, buddy. Good info.
Yeah, see you, fellas. Take care.
You got it. That is our Beltway Blitz. We do it every day. Jam three teams you care about into one segment. So time up the commute home to get up to speed on all the clubs you care about. I just asked Scott the question. I want to have this discussion with you next. What are the needs that nobody's talking about? Everybody wants to discuss quarterback at two, offensive tackle soon thereafter. What else do they still have to get done before they're playing football games? We're Grant and Danny.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Crazy to me that there are still home openers taking place today in Major League Baseball around the country. It's just wild to see. Fenway Park and Boston baseball back. Orioles and Red Sox playing an afternoon game with Baltimore up 4-1. Feels like the Nats, who didn't even open on the first day of the season, had to wait a series.
Mm-hmm.
That home opener feels like it was a few weeks ago. Last couple days we've had matinee inaugural home games of the year all over the place. If you're just joining us today, the big Nats news is Josiah Gray to the injured list with forearm and elbow issues. Obviously, when you hear that with a pitcher, back of your head, you're going to have nerves and fear the worst, but it is also possible that this is why he was struggling. They park him for a couple of weeks, get him back out on the mound, build him up, and he's back in the rotation, feeling better and pitching more effectively because it was an ugly first couple outings. And the Nats have had some success with guys who had some forearm tightness and things that didn't end up having long-term issues. So that's what you got
to
hope for.
That is, yeah, that is the hope. That is kind of the way to thread this needle here is that he needs a bit of a shutdown, bit of a rest, bit of a restart, and he comes back and is hopefully closer to himself.
What's the biggest need nobody talks about for the Commanders? I want to separate quarterback and tackle. I think otherwise we can have a wide open conversation here. But it seems like 95% of the discussion about the team right now, 16 days before the NFL draft, is about QB and the number two pick. And with that is the possibility of, you don't really hear anyone talking about trading up to one anymore. That's kind of gone away.
Yep.
But certainly trading back, getting a quarterback later, standing pat and taking Daniels or May is the normal conversation. But quarterback this, quarterback that. The number two discussion is about tackle, which is clearly their second biggest need. They literally don't have a starting left tackle on their team with any kind of proven ability right now. They did keep Cornelius Lucas, who's their tweener, who's their backup. And I guess in a pinch, he could start the first game of the season, but he's not a starter. They didn't pay him to be one. He hasn't been on the depth chart as one the last couple of years. He wasn't in his previous team, Chicago. He is a swing tackle. He's the third tackle on the team. For the moment, though, he's their left tackle because Charles Leno is gone. So that's going to be the pick at 36 or 40, or they're going to package those two selections and go up to the first round to get a tackle. But what else would you consider to be a big need for them that doesn't get the ink?
So I think receivers almost like just off the podium there. I think people are starting to come around to the idea that they might need something in that department. With all due respect to Olamide Zaccheaus, who they've added, they're not returning their second, third, and fifth leading receivers in terms of passes caught from last year. I'll say that again. 2, 3, and 5 in terms of receptions. They're all elsewhere. Curtis Samuel, Logan Thomas, Antonio Gibson. There are replacements there, certainly, in terms of Austin Eckler to take the place and frankly supersede Antonio Gibson. But in terms of receiving talent, in terms of a tight end, that's kind of my 1A for this, is they need another pass catcher who's capable. Not somebody who can be a 34-catch guy and be an option when Terry McLaurin's tired. A target, a bona fide, a real thing. If they believe it's Jahan Dotson, okay. But this draft is too rich for me to think that they just went about this offseason adding talent everywhere to be guys that are going to play on their front lines and not think that receiver was something they could eyeball, right? They left tackle and they left receiver to the draft.
I consider myself aggressive in my consideration for receiver as a need and tight end. And even I wouldn't put it at the top of the list for their other needs. To me, while those are more needs than wants, a lot of people will say, you got McLaurin and Dotson and De'Ami Brown and Crowder and Dax Milne and Olamide Zaccheaus. It'd be nice to do better than that, but if they had to start the season, they're fine. Or at tight end, they went and they got Ertz, and they've still got Bates, and now Cole Turner's out of the doghouse with the previous regime. I think you got to go get a pass catcher at tight end who's a weapon, and I'm with you. I think you got to add a receiver early. I would try to. But defensive end, to me, is a bigger need, and I don't even think it's that close. Now, they signed three of those guys, so you've got Clelin Ferrell, who comes over from San Francisco. Dorrance Armstrong, who they signed a good money from Dallas, was probably their, I don't know, number two or three free agent addition overall in terms of long-term importance. And then Dante Fowler, who's a bit of a pass-rushing specialist. So they might feel like, look, we threw money at the problem. Even though Ferrell is a hired gun and Dante Fowler is a duct tape for a problem for a season, that'll get us through the year. We don't need anybody else. I still think, though, if you're looking at this roster for now, 2, 3, 4 years from now, whatever it is, I think defensive end is probably, with cornerback, two areas where they don't have a choice, but they have to go upgrade. Like, linebacker is borderline set because they went and signed Frankie Louvu from Carolina, Bobby Wagner from Seattle, People forget, but they brought in Anthony Pittman, who's a great special teams player from Detroit, who's going to provide depth at linebacker as well. And you still have Jamin Davis, obviously. So where they've been basically two deep, if you were really bullish on one of their backups, maybe three deep at best, they're now four deep at linebacker. But at corner, right now their number one's Benjamin St. Juice.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that again.
Yeah.
Their number one corner to chase around CeeDee Lamb and all the best, you know, wide receivers in football is Benjamin St. Juice. Their starter opposite him on the other side at this moment is probably Emmanuel Forbes, who was benched multiple times last year and looked like he had no business playing. So if it's him on the outside with St. Juice and then maybe Quan Martin playing some safety and some nickel, something like that, the rest of your corners are James Pierre, who they signed from the Steelers, I wouldn't recognize if you gave me a lineup to choose from. Michael Davis.
Michael Davis.
Brought over from the Chargers, who could play. If Emmanuel Forbes falters, they did sign Noah Igbinoghene, the former Dallas Cowboy, who was a bust first-round pick, but you know at least can help them some. But I think those would be the positions I look at. And maybe as I workshop this out loud, corner is their biggest need.
So here, right now. I think you're going to disagree with me on this. When you say it's their biggest need, I think if they have a design of competing this year, you're right. In other words, if you want a Houston turnaround, you better have an upgraded corner. You better have upgrades at defensive end. You better be able to have a better defense than you've had. I don't have designs if I'm in charge of competing this year. My whole focus is on giving this quarterback a chance. So my priorities are offensive things, more offensive things, extra offensive things, more than I need. And once I feel that I've built a nest for him, now, if there was a great opportunity to go get a defensive end in this draft or a corner that was a star that fell to them in round two or three, I'm not complaining about that. But to me, it's not my priority now. Like, if their defense is bad, they won't win that many games.
Right,
I'm okay with that.
But respectfully, like, if you and I are talking about what do we want to see them do, that's a whole different conversation. Whereas I want wide receivers and I want tight ends and I want to help the kid quarterback, sounds like just like you do.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about need, like, how we'd prefer them to build the roster, I guess, maybe it's relevant. I'm not sure that
it is. But that's how I see it as what the needs are. Because to me, if all things are equal and you're like the division's up for grabs, we want to get up to where Philly is and Dallas is, even though they both might be taking steps back. But bear with me. Washington's clearly behind them in the pecking order. We want to be them. You're totally right. They need that. They absolutely do.
But it's not even that. Where do they have the least NFL proven talent? You know, where do they... Where are they too thin where you go, they don't have starters?
Mm-hmm.
You know, tackle is a need, not because they have a number two overall pick coming at quarterback. That's why it's more important. But it's a need because Cornelius Lucas is your starting left tackle.
Yeah, our lads list Braden Daniels is the left tackle.
Yeah,
no,
give me a break.
No.
I mean, at cornerback right now, Emmanuel Forbes, who just had no business on the field mm-hmm. for the most of last year, is a starting corner, number two in the depth chart in the organization. You're going up against teams running with 11 personnel every single week, meaning three wide receivers. And a lot of those teams have two stars and a third really good wideout. So Michael Davis from the Chargers, who knows who he is that's listening right now, and Emmanuel Forbes and Benjamin St. Juice, who I like. He's long, he's physical, he does some good things. But it's been a mixed bag. Like, he's not a cornerback one in this league. Cornerback is a major need. They have to add talent at that position. And even though they've thrown a couple of reinforcements at the problem.
Yeah, human beings are at the position.
Davis, Igbinoghene. I think they signed one other guy. That guy, James Pierre from the Steelers, was like a special teams player. That's been the offseason. They did not address it, really. Like, to me, that's the Rivera offensive line plan.
Uh-huh.
Hey, we fixed it. No, you didn't. You went and got Michael Davis and Noah Igbinoghene. You got me a fourth and a fifth corner, or you know maybe a third and a fourth corner.
At best.
I'm still trying to figure out where the first and the second corner is. So to me, that it's hard to compare wide receiver and tight end to that. Are there other areas that we're not thinking about where they just need more NFL talent right now?
So they've done a good job, at least replacing out guys. I mean, we'll see.
It happens when you sign 25 free agents.
Well, yeah. But looking at the interior offensive line, for example, with Nick Allegretti, Tyler Biadasz, those guys, in theory, on paper, make sense, are upgrades you know, because they weren't evaluated by Rivera and company. So you would think those guys would be better than their predecessors, right? At center and left guard, or left guard and center, respectively. But I don't know. Wouldn't you love maybe one other offensive lineman? Maybe it's another swing type player. Would you love them to come out of like a project that's not a Braden Daniels, that's somebody that can actually play maybe in this league? Like if Sadiq Charles had hit to maybe supersede Andrew Wiley at some point at right tackle? Because right now that's the plan. It's Andrew Wiley. And whoever the left tackle is, and Cornelius Lucas maybe subs in for those guys as needed, a second tackle is not crazy to me in terms of a need or a want for the long-term upgrades.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, the right tackle thing's funny because at the beginning of the offseason, I really hoped they'd sign two new tackles, or whether it's sign or draft, what have you. You know, they'd get to a point where they had two new tackles. And Andrew Wiley would no longer be a starter for them. Now, I don't even think that can be on our radar yet. Like, we can't worry about replacing the right tackle who they'd have under contract and are paying good money to this coming season when they don't even have one on the left side. So I would love that too. And maybe we can throw that on the list, but it seems unlikely that that's a priority for them based on how they've operated on the left side.
Because I think for the most part, depth-wise, you bring back John Ridgeway, Fedarian Mathis, who we've still never really seen, but in theory,
he played a lot last year.
As a nice rotational piece, could help them. Efe Obada, I think, is back as well. So I like the rotational guys behind your front line, Allen and Payne type dudes, right? I think Armstrong's a nice piece. I think I'm maybe a little bit higher on him than you are.
No, but I like Armstrong.
But, you know, for Fowler to kind of come off the bench as a situational pass rusher, et cetera, I kind of like that sort of mid-level of depth. They need an upgrade there big time, long term, correct? Indisputable, but to get away this way.
Defensive end. And he's not a guy that's going to get 10 sacks every year. But Dorrance Armstrong can be an 8 to 10 sack starting defensive end. Farrell, to me, is a rotational piece, and Fowler's a situational pass rusher.
Yep.
Now, you could have a Farrell-Fowler, like a platoon, if you will, on the one side. But they have a starting end, and they have no one who has a chance to get 12 sacks.
And I think there's going to be a mix and match type thing that Quinn and company do, maybe more directly Joe Witt does, where, for example, Payne, Allen, and a third defensive tackle are in the game, and then you have Luvu blitzing off the side of one of those guys, almost acting as a standing up defensive end in certain packages.
So
I think there's going to be a lot of mixing matching. So they're going to get away with stuff or coach around some things, but
See Luvu leading them in sacks this year. If they, you know, Bobby Wagner will be their every down mic probably.
Yeah.
So if Luvu ends up walking down into the box and being an edge and standing up like you're talking about, he could go get them, you know, nine and a half sacks or something if they use him as a pass rusher a bunch. I also wonder if they're going to use Jamin Davis in that way at all. Jamin Davis has been pretty good coming downhill at quarterbacks too.
Well, when they do it, when he blitzes, remember that it wasn't last year, I guess the year before. First handful of games, I think he had 3.5-4 sacks doing that, and then it was like, no, we probably should stop doing that and have him not identify run plays well.
What are your areas where you think they have more need than people around you do? You know, where do you think the Commanders' big needs are that don't get talked about outside of quarterback and tackle? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. Taking you up to 6:30 on the Fan, Grant and Danny, on this Tuesday after the national championship was won by UConn. Day.
No.
Quarterback, number two. Offensive tackle soon thereafter. Obvious needs for the Commanders. What else doesn't get talked about, but is an area on this roster where they've got to upgrade? And here's where I'll give Adam Peters and his staff a lot of credit. I don't think the Commanders are really good anywhere. And they're certainly not built to go win a division in many places. But by signing the 24+, you know, 25 or so players, the veterans that they did, at running back where they needed help, they get Eckler. At quarterback where they needed help, they go get Mariota and Driscoll. You know, at tight end, they go get Ertz. On the interior of the line, as you said, Allegretti and Biotish and Michael Dieter. At receiver, they go get Zaccheaus. Defensively, where they spent even more. Linebacker, Wagner, Luvu, Pittman, Walker. Defensive line, Armstrong, Fowler, Farrell. Secondary, Davis, Igbinogheni, Jeremy Chinn, James Pierre. It's pretty amazing how they can now just draft based on wants more than needs largely. There's a couple of spots where they don't have any choice. You just have to get somebody there. But that's what free agency did for them, and I like the way they went about it. It wasn't long-term deals.
Same
it
here.
Wasn't long commitments. They dated. They didn't marry. They didn't get down on a knee and get proposed. But they basically kicked the can down the road at a lot of positions for a year, so that now they can draft the best possible player.
And I refuse to accept the idea that this group wasn't savvy enough to have an eye towards the draft as they executed free agency. And here's what I mean. If you had just signed, you know, let's say you got a free agency board and you just signed the top whatever players that you wanted, and that was that, and then you kind of approached the draft. They looked at this draft and said, this is a great tackle draft. This is a great receiver draft. We are not going to block any potential really good player that we could get in rounds one or two with our 2 second round picks with some, you know, 30-year-old probably making a little bit more money than he should because we needed to fill a need. I think they had an eyeball towards it. I think they didn't want to go spend in free agency on a wide receiver because that market was not particularly very good. The tackle market was weird. A guy I thought would be a frontline player, for example, Tyron Smith, didn't get a whole heck of a lot of money or a whole heck of a lot of years. So they didn't think they want to upgrade there, and they go, this is our best path to go get better. I refuse to accept the idea that this is sort of done in a vacuum. They set themselves up very well, as you said, to go dip into a couple talent-rich pools at, or three really, quarterback, tackle, receiver slash tight end.
Let's go to the phones. Pat is in Alexandria on Grant and Danny. What's up, Pat?
Hey, you know, I hear you talk about the chaos for the receiver game, but I feel like of all the positions they missed, they haven't really addressed fully is the receivers. Like, I look at the Bears, fully invested in their first year starting next year in Caleb with getting DJ Moore, obviously, last year. And now they're going to – I hear today they might be trying to trade up at the ninth pick, the package to get up to the fourth pick. I saw it on Barstool. And then the other approach is the Packers, who, like, hit on all of their late-round wide receiver picks a couple years ago to get the wide receiver talent in there for Love in his first year. It looks like the Redskins or the Commanders are going to have to get those late-round hits in the wide receiver department because they didn't really make the splash – wide receiver free agency moves like the Bears did.
Well, don't forget Chicago traded for Keenan Allen, too.
Yeah.
To set the bed for, set the bed, is that a phrase? To make the bed or build the nest for Caleb Williams.
Here's the problem, though, with his comp, I guess, is Washington's starting point was McLaurin and Dotson. Now, if you're down on Dotson after last year, fine. But that's a top 20 pick at wide receiver that they invested. That's a major allocation.
Mm-hmm.
McLaurin, who they've paid good money to, is a terrific top half the NFL wide receiver, top 15 or so wide receiver in the sport. So Green Bay had to go draft Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, Bo Melton, you know, whatever else they did in their receiver room, because they didn't have any wide receivers after Davante Adams walked. Chicago went and traded for DJ Moore and Keenan Allen because they had an abysmal receiver group. Their number one at one point in the first year of Justin Fields there was
Darnell Mooney.
I guess it'd be Mooney. Yeah. I mean, it was like the Darnell Mooney experience at wide receiver. They went through tight ends and running backs. So I don't think it's completely fair to say here's what these other teams are doing and Washington's not. Washington's starting point is they've got a DJ Moore-ish figure in Terry McLaurin, and they are hoping that Dotson's the real deal. I was wrong about him last year and saying I thought he could be their wide receiver one and, you know, that he was going to go out and catch 80 balls for 1,200 yards or whatever. It was a bad season for him. Hopefully, kick him in the slot, let him be an outstanding slot wide receiver, have McLaurin on the outside, and then they draft an X at 40. You know, when I say an X wide receiver, a vertical kind of number one type, I would love to see them draft a wide receiver in the second round. If they don't do it there because they package 36 and 40 to go up the board, which is possible to get there.
If you want to tackle.
Left tackle at like number 17 or maybe, I don't know, like let's say 20. You know, you go up that high. Oh, fine. Then trade 36 and 40, go up to 20. Then come back with your next pick where they have their next selection and make that your wide receiver. Because something that you were alluding to, Danny, that we beat the drums on for this all the time is don't Justin Fields your rookie quarterback.
Yep.
You know, don't give him nothing. So at 67 or 78, which is the pick he got from Seattle with the Sam Howell deal, which is just outside of, you know, early third round, basically, that's your wide receiver then. But you got to get someone that can help you right away. This isn't a De'Ami Brown 3 years later, we're hoping. You need to hit on that pick. It's got to be someone who can play in September and go out and catch, you know, 5-6 balls for you a few times in the first handful of weeks of the season.
And so you think about it, too. The guy that is going in the first round, typically, and I'm generalizing. There's going to be specific examples. You can counter me on this. But the guy going in the first round is, this is my number one. Everything in the route tree is his. He can do it all. He's the dude, right? He's my future number one receiver. See Odunzie, see Harrison Jr., whatever, right? The guy in the third and fourth round, in theory, could be a De'Ami Brown-like player where he's not an every down wide out. He's not a great route runner who's not a superstar. It doesn't always turn into Terry McLaurin. He could be a deep threat, though. He could be a one-trick pony, and that trick might help you a lot if this is the kind of offense you want to run. Or he could be a guy that can run, I don't know, half the route tree, but that's the half you need someone to run opposite Terry McLaurin and maybe with Dotson in various formations or Eckler splitting a stack. But different things like that, right? You can have an eye towards that. This is the thing that the Ravens always do. I never know how to quantify this very well, but everybody looks at what someone can't do, and the Ravens will always go, yeah, but here's what he can do, and that'll help us, right? And they figure it out. I want that.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Colin Cowherd thinks he knows who the Commanders are drafting at number two. He's going hard in the paint. He's got it all figured out. Next on G&D.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.